Hi, this is Ernie Fazio, and this is the show is Earnestly Speaking. We talk about a lot of different topics on this show, and sometimes I just go off on my own little tear, and that's one of these days. I call this kind of a show Reading the Paper, and it's so imaginative to call it that because that's exactly what I'm doing, reading the paper. I'm looking at some of the stories here. And one of the things is in today's paper is something about flood, protecting for flood, you know, situations like Sandy. Well, there's a lot of controversy over this, because how much can you protect the shoreline? There are certain places possibly that you shouldn't be in. Now, I probably wouldn't be saying this 10 years ago, because I did have a house on the shore. And when I did have a house on the shore, of course, I wanted to make sure that I continued to own it. But the truth of the matter is that it would be a matter of time when the migrating sea, which is normal for over time, would overtake that place I had in Fire Island. But now the situation is more than that. It's actually a rising tide, in other words, a rising sea. And that will mean that the island will not only shift and move back, it'll also not be there. It'll be covered eventually. So the answer to that is probably not within the realm of us being able to fix right away. But over a long period of time, it probably can be addressed with, you know, remedies to global warming. Now, remedies to global warming are many. And one of the things we shouldn't be doing is using oil. And anything that comes out of the ground has a tremendous amount of greenhouse gases anyway. And if you burn the greenhouse gases, you actually reduce the amount of greenhouse gases from, let's say, something like methane, which is more than 20 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than, say, carbon dioxide. However, if we go to green and then we really make an effort to do it, and Germany is doing this, so I'm not convinced that it's not possible. The Germans are among the best engineers in the world, and they're very determined. And they don't have better weather than we do. And when it comes to solar, their solar arrays are at a disadvantage to most of our solar arrays, and yet they're putting a lot of money into that because eventually they're getting more efficient. They're learning more ways to get more out of it. 20 years ago, a solar array would probably get 12% of the energy that comes from the sun and produce electricity. Today, that's well into 18%, and some people are telling me it's as high as 22%. So it's like we keep doing the research, and we keep making the progress, and we keep making it cheaper, too. So eventually, that will be a much, much better product. Now, over at Brookhaven National Laboratories, with the Light Source program, they can analyze things that are, you know, on an atomic scale and find out how to align molecules so that they can absorb more and more of the energy. It might get to the point where we can get most of the energy that comes out of the sun and convert it to electrical energy. And if we can do that, we can reduce the cost so much that fossil fuels would not be competitive. They wouldn't even be close. And speaking of the cost of fossil fuels, we don't even pay for the cost of fossil fuels. All of those battleships and, aircraft carriers and all of the vessels that go around the world and keep the Straits of Hormuz open and all the places where oil travels through and keeps the seas safe are a cost that are far and above the cost of just the defense of this country. It's to protect the passage of oil, to protect the economies of the world. Now, I don't think that's a bad idea. I just don't think it's a necessary thing once we get to another state of energy use and where we get our energy from. So if we, as we pursue these things like hot rock geothermal, electrical production, river run electrical generators, windmills, and every other means of producing energy, we are producing more and more energy that way, and the tipping point is here. I think we're going to be going faster and faster in that direction. But there is another thing happening in the field of energy, and I think that we ought to mention that right now. It's efficiency. The refrigerator that you had, that your father and mother had 30 years ago, was using a lot of energy. Today, it's much, much less, probably 15 or 20% of that energy that we used to use to make refrigeration. Better product, a better design, more better insulation. All of those things are contributing factors. We can still move forward on those things, and we can keep the energy costs lower by virtue of using less of it, as well as producing it cheaper. So efficiency of the homes and the buildings that we live in are very, very important. And we have people who are working on that all the time. And I've interviewed a few of them on the show. And there's such a wealth of ideas out there. When we become entrenched in a technology like oil and gas, we tend to say, okay, that's the way things are. Well, that's not necessarily the way things are. And even if they, we didn't have all these promising things out there, we should have been looking for them and creating them. Not only is that better for us in the long run, it's exciting. It gives people who are in science something to think about other than the status quo. You know, there was a time in this country when we wanted to close the patent office because everything that was worth being patented was already built and invented. Well, it might surprise you to know that that was in the late 90s of the 1790s. 1790s, not the 1990s, that they thought that there was no reason to keep the patent office open because there would be no more useful inventions or it wouldn't be very important. Well, that was not even before the birth of great discovery. And so sometimes we have the imagination of a gnat in going, looking at the world we live in. And the clear-minded person who sees opportunity and hope, and he doesn't necessarily have any idea where he's going. But what happens is he creates as he goes along. I don't believe that someone like Steve Jobs was the great technician that he needed to be. He was a great visionary that got the technicians to do what they had to do to make the vision a reality. And when we have imaginative people like that, now I'm no big fan of Steve Jobs, by the way, but he certainly was a visionary. And what he did was create things that people, he got people to create his vision of the life that he would like to be in and learn about. So we have great products as a result of that kind of thing. We have not touched, we have not scratched the surface. There's so much more to do. And the reason why I can't tell you what that is because I don't have the imagination to get there. But somebody does, and somebody young who's well-educated and knows what's gone on before will have a grasp of what possibilities there are. There's a great questions that have never been asked. And what are those questions? Well, we don't know because they've never been asked. This is Ernie Fazio, and the show is Earnestly Speaking. We're talking on Long Island News Radio, 103.9 FM. This has been a pleasure talking to you today, and I hope you enjoyed the thought process that we try to explore from here on this show from time to time. Thanks for listening. And may I say, not
in a shy way. Oh no, not me. I did it my.
That was segment three, right? Let me see what else we got. Okay, I'm ready. Hi, this is Ernie Fazio, and the show is Earnestly Speaking, and we're talking on Long Island News Radio, 103.9 FM, and as is my wont, we talk about various topics. One of the things I was that bothered me a lot is that in the last debacle, financial debacle that we had in this country, no one went to jail. How come is that? That is a strange thing. When we had the crisis back in the early 90s with the mortgage, the loans, hundreds of people went to jail. We have a bunch of politicians who are afraid of their own shadow, and they're afraid to put these people in jail because they're living off the same trough for their contributions to their treasuries for running for office so that they can keep their cushy jobs another time. Well, that's got to stop. And here's how we stop it. Since they won't do it, we have to do it. And here's how we do it. If you're a businessman and you're doing business with, say, one of the big banks like Bank of America or Citibank or any of these creeps who screwed us out of billions and billions of dollars, we have small banks like Empire Bank. We have Gold Coast Bank, we have a Signature Bank. These are not big banks. These people have to live by a code of conduct that's monitorable, and they do a pretty good job of keeping their books so that they are solvent. The big banks, they run amok, and they're too big to fail, so we have to bail them out. So we make them too small, make them smaller. And the way we make them smaller is giving our business to the small banks. And needless to say, if you're an individual, you shouldn't be in any of those banks in any case. You probably should be in a credit union. But the small banks for small businesses and medium-sized businesses will do just fine. And they do a great job. In fact, I do some work for one of the banks, so the Gold Coast Bank, and I appreciate the personal touch that these people have. But it's not just the personal touch. It's the financial and the fiduciary responsibility of keeping that bank solvent, and they do that by keeping a good eye on how they loan money to people. We do not trust people like we used to, and I remember owning a tree farm in Vermont many years ago when I was in my 20s, and I went in to get some money to build a road to get to the back of the tree farm, and I think it's the funniest thing in the world. The banker said to me, "Hello, Mr. Fazio." He said, "What can I do for you?" I said, "Well, I need X number of dollars to build a road to the back of my property, and I wanted to see if I can get the money." And he says, he put down his newspaper and he looked in the back room and he says to the secretary, "Get Mr. Fazio's loan prepared. He needs X number of dollars and whatnot." And he looked at me and he says, "Why don't you go to lunch? When you come back, we'll have you sign the papers and the money will be in your account." And that's how easy it was. But you know what that's all about? It's all about trusting the person you know in the room. When you walk in the room and you see this fellow who has lots of assets but no money, you know that he's good for it, and you make a judgment. And you don't cherry pick the people who have the political muscle, like say Donald Trump, who's a meathead in my opinion, but he's got every banker in the country scared. And they borrow billions of dollars, and they have very little to back it up. And if, when they get lucky, they make money. When they get unlucky, we pay for it. Nice, it's a nice game, but it's not for me. So what we need to do is make these banks smaller, and when they become smaller, people like Donald Trump will be scrutinized with greater care, because if he goes belly up, then they go belly up, and nobody cares. Nobody gives a damn if they go belly up, because they don't represent us. Meanwhile, we have our banks, and we should be patronizing them. They're good. They're solid. They're people you can talk to. And my little bank up in Lindenville, Vermont, which is pretty close to the Canadian border, was a typical thing up there. And they still exist up there in greater numbers. Of course, Vermont is a very strange state to begin with, and we know that we were in a little different arena to begin with. Here on Long Island, we do have small banks, and they're good, and they're solid, and they're well run, and we should be patronizing them. So, I see that Ford came out with a new car, a new truck. They saved £700 on that vehicle in its redesign, using a lot of aluminum. Now, that's a very, very innovative for them to do, because they had already had a successful product. Why change something that's already successful? And the answer is because it can be done. And somebody said, since it can be done, let's do it. Now, it's £700 savings the weight of that vehicle means better gas mileage, and it also means that it's equivalent to three fat mother-in-laws being thrown out of the car, and you'll go faster and you'll do it cheaper. So, God bless. Good for you guys over at Ford. So, double dipping employees of the state. That's cool. You know what that is? That's when you retire as a cop and then go to work as a teacher, and then you get another pension, and you're getting your old pension. You know, I think our pensions are pretty generous enough. Why do we have to support several pensions for the same person? I don't think you should retire necessarily on more money than you earned while you were working. And because of this skewering of how we do pensions in the first place, we had a tremendous loss of firemen in New York City after 9/11. Those men worked so many hours overtime that they built up a last year reservoir credits for retirement, that if they retired after that year, they would have made more money than they had earned in their working life. So they did the prudent thing. The thing that made sense is that they got out. And now we will, all of those highly experienced, very talented, and capable firemen went out on retirement. So these are the things that kind of make you wonder who's designing this, a bunch of morons? Who do we hire to run our governments? People who are gutless to fight back and to protect the interests of the people? So that was, how many years and hundreds of years of experience we lost by having that stupid rule. I don't blame the firemen, because if I were one of those firemen, I probably would have done the very same thing. I would have gotten out, hot-footed out of there with a nice pension, bigger than the money that I was earning as a hard-working fireman, and found something else to do, and a lot of them did it. So That's one of the problems that we have, and we're going to be continuing to have those problems until we start addressing them. And we won't address them unless we hire somebody in government who can. So that's why when I run for Congress, and I will, because you know why I'm going to run for Congress? Because I'm an old man, and I have term limits. One day I'll plot. Nobody will give a damn. But at least I'll be able to give my best while I'm working. Thank you for listening, and this has been fun talking, and this is Ernie Fazio. The show is Earnestly Speaking, 103.9 FM, Long Island News Radio. Thanks. I've traveled each and every highway and more, much more than this I've